I'm Yanilda with Leanne and Nell, bringing you Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, your peace and justice radio station.
On June 24th, 2003, the Supreme Court rendered two decisions that will significantly impact how affirmative action programs will function at institutions of higher learning.
That's right. And we're following the name Lee Bollinger today from Columbia University here in New York to the University of Michigan, where he used to be president and served as the named defendant in the affirmative action cases before the Supreme Court. In Gratz v. Bollinger, white plaintiffs who were denied undergraduate admissions to the University of Michigan filed a class action lawsuit against the university. The suit alleged that the university violated Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 by using race as a plus factor when evaluating candidates. In Grutter v. Bollinger, an applicant denied admission to the University of Michigan Law School challenged the school's use of so-called soft variables, such as race and socioeconomic status, to achieve a diverse student body.
The court ruled in Grutter that, quote, student body diversity is a compelling state interest that can justify the use of race in university admissions. However, the court held that the university's undergraduate policy of automatically distributing 20 points toward acceptance to every underrepresented minority was not acceptable.
Joining us now to discuss how these decisions have been implemented at campuses across the country and to discuss strategies that opponents of affirmative action may employ to overturn these rulings is Jay Rosner. Jay is an attorney and executive director of the Princeton Review Foundation, a nonprofit organization that addresses the test preparation needs of underserved students. Jay, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hey, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And first of all, just to start out, maybe you could just get us up to speed with how admissions offices, especially at undergraduate campuses, have been handling these decisions.
Sure. The Supreme Court decision came down at the end of June, and admissions cycles begin in the fall. That is, students typically apply in the fall for admission for the following September. So there was a relatively short timeline, and some admissions offices have modified their procedures. Others are beginning to study the modification of their procedures for next year. The University of Michigan, since their undergraduate admissions procedures were specifically criticized by the Supreme Court, has modified their procedures for this year. So various undergraduate admissions offices are in various stages of examining their procedures and making modifications.
Okay. And I was wondering, are there states right now that are not currently bound by the Supreme Court decisions?
Yes. Unfortunately, the state of California and the state of Washington are not affected by the Supreme Court decisions. I'm in California, and in these two states, affirmative action was rolled back by ballot propositions, and those situations, unfortunately, are not affected by the Supreme Court decision. Florida is in a somewhat similar situation in that their affirmative rollback was by gubernatorial proclamation, so to speak, and that's not affected by the Supreme Court decisions. There were rollbacks of affirmative action in Texas and the surrounding states through the Hopwood decision. Since that was a court-based affirmative action rollback, that was reversed by the Supreme Court decision. So we're still left with three states where public university admissions offices cannot use affirmative action.
Well, Jay, speaking of efforts to roll back affirmative action, there's a petition in Michigan that's going to be circulating next year. If 317,757 signatures are filed, voters are going to see a ballot measure in November that's going to ask whether affirmative action should be practiced at public universities and other public agencies. What do you think about this?
Well, this is a very clever and very troubling maneuver by the opponents of affirmative action to go state by state and to try to replicate what they were able to accomplish in California and Washington. That is, have a ballot initiative which skirts the impact of the Supreme Court decision and provides another basis, a different basis for rolling back affirmative action. I'm hoping, obviously, as we all are, who, those of us who are in favor of affirmative action, that they failed miserably. There were lessons learned in California and Washington by proponents of affirmative action that will, I hope, be used to counter the initiative in Michigan. And, of course, there was great organizing around the University of Michigan cases by student organizations and others, unions, to support affirmative action. And I'm hoping and have some confidence that those forces will rally and be effective in Michigan against that initiative.
And maybe you could also talk a little about the strategy that conservatives are using with some of these ballot initiatives where they're not using clear language.
Sure. There's an interesting history of ballot initiatives. When the language in a ballot initiative uses and focuses on the term preferences, as the ballot initiatives in California and the state of Washington did, there are a number of Americans in the middle who are not clear on their position on affirmative action, but are inclined to be against preferences. And the initiatives in California and the state of Washington prevailed against affirmative action, I believe, because of the use of the terminology. The counterexample is the city of Houston. There was a ballot initiative in the city of Houston where, instead of using the word preferences, the ballot initiative used specifically the words affirmative action. And that was supported. Affirmative action was supported by the popular vote in Houston. So it's just my conclusion and my analysis, and it's shared by lots of others, that the words in the initiative are absolutely key, that if Americans are asked straight up if they support affirmative action, a majority will, but if the language involves an opposition to preferences, it's certainly possible, as we've seen in California and Washington, that a majority will vote against preferences and sort of ban affirmative action by the back door. And as you might guess, the Michigan initiative uses the terminology preferences. So that is a considerable cause for concern.
Well, we're going to bring on some student organizers around affirmative action in just a moment, but I want to ask you, Jay, this is Nell, one of the other hosts, what, you know, affirmative action is really about here is, many people would argue, addressing systemic racism in the United States, but the Supreme Court rulings cite the, you know, benefits of diversity in higher education. Can you talk about how that focus on diversity shapes what is going to happen with the outcome of implementing these decisions?
Sure. The terminology is critical as to how people perceive what's going on. The use of the word diversity comes right from Justice Powell's opinion in the Bakke case. His opinion was grounded upon the concept of diversity. Excuse me, and that's the only reason why the Supreme Court's decision is founded upon diversity. It was Justice O'Connor on the current court, going back to Justice Powell's opinion and using that as the analytical framework. Those of us who support affirmative action much prefer to use the term integration and its opposite, segregation, because those are powerful historical terms that are evocative of images and an important history in this country that people tend to understand more clearly. Diversity is important and useful, but as a term to base this policy on of supporting affirmative action, it's weaker, it's fuzzier. It doesn't have the very dramatic history that the terms integration and segregation have for us. So one of the organizing principles, I think, of those who support affirmative action is to use the term diversity, but to really emphasize the term integration and its opposite, segregation, because those terms are more powerful and more evocative.
Okay, that's great. And Jay, we're going to bring in now two student organizers from Ann Arbor from the University of Michigan. We're joined now on the line also by Mark Kamamura and Jackie Bray. Mark is a member of Students of Color at Rackham, and Jackie is a member of Students Supporting Affirmative Action. Mark, Jackie, welcome.
Good morning.
So can you briefly kind of bring us back to the spring and summer and just describe for our listeners some of the excitement around the organizing work that you were doing before the Supreme Court decisions?
Jackie, why don't you start on a little bit about Students Supporting Affirmative Action?
Sure, absolutely. Students Supporting Affirmative Action was kind of a collective of leaders that formed because so many organizations wanted to respond to the cases at Michigan, and we were so much in the national spotlight and felt somewhat of a responsibility to be there and be doing things. And so it really was a collective of leaders that got together in January of 2003 and started to put together goals and ideas and a platform and organizing principles to work around. And then really kind of in early March launched a very, very large organizing campaign that included a lot of education and a lot of very specific education in each of our communities, and then a huge mobilization to D.C. And by the end, you know, by April 1st, we had about 13 buses coming from Ann Arbor down to D.C. and countless other personal cars. And so kind of culminated at the Supreme Court with a day in Washington. We held our own press conference with senators and congressmen and went to all the rallies. And so that was exciting for us. And I should say that the day before, we held a Student of Color Day of Silence on the Ann Arbor campus, in which students of color gagged themselves and white allies wore armbands to show how silencing the debate around affirmative action has been.
And can you talk about how you've worked to keep the momentum going since then, student organizers at Michigan and others at other campuses you're in touch with?
Sure. I mean, I think that this summer it was quite easy to keep the momentum going. The spotlight was still on Michigan, and affirmative action was still kind of in the balance. And so we did a bunch of national meetings, both in D.C. and in Ann Arbor, particularly with students, and particularly undergraduate students from California, Texas, Florida, and Michigan, because those have been kind of the four states in which the affirmative action battles have raged on. And so we did a bunch of national meetings with those students, to really develop a strategy for both, for if the cases came out, however the cases did come out. And then I think when we won, and it was such a really resounding and good victory for all of us, that helped sustain momentum. And literally a week after that, Ward Connerly announced that he would be in Michigan this coming year. And so that kept our energy up and our focus pretty razor sharp in terms of working and getting ready to defeat his ballot initiative.
Well, Mark, or maybe Jackie, you want to jump in about this. What are your reactions to the recent ballot initiative or the petition drive for the ballot initiative in Michigan, and what are you going to do to respond to it?
Mark. Graduate student perspective, we have actually been able to start guiding some of our research towards that area to see what we can do, to best attack this new issue, which is actually an old issue because actually I'm a California person myself, but seeing how things have played out in other states, it's really important that we attack it from both an academic standpoint and from an organizing standpoint. I believe Students Supporting Affirmative Action, the group that Jackie is involved with, is doing some things that we're currently not doing, so maybe she can talk about that.
Yeah, we are participating in Michigan United, and Citizens for United Michigan, which is a coalition of kind of the large civil rights organizations and the unions in Michigan that are getting ready to gear up to face Ward Connerly's challenge head on. And I think, you know, an important lesson that we've learned in Michigan through the cases and through these initiatives is that Michigan really can be a stopping ground, right? People thought that these cases, like Hopwood in Texas, would kind of sweep across the country, and maybe if we were lucky, we'd stop them on the East Coast. But I think a lot of people in Michigan knew that, you know, Michigan was a challenge and that Michigan was going to put up a fight on the legal side, and we're going to put up a fight on the ballot initiative side. So that there is a lot of good organizing going on in terms of figuring out how to talk about these issues in different communities and figuring out how to talk and do the organizing of a ballot initiative. We're certainly taking our lessons from California and from Washington and have been really reading up about what went wrong there and what they did well there. And we are also taking our lessons from the vouchers initiative, which was defeated recently in Michigan. But I think that something that, you know, University of Michigan has benefited from is that Mark is really right, that the grad students are, you know, can help us a lot with our organizing because of the academic work they do and because of how deep their knowledge is on some of this stuff. And undergrads kind of have more time and energy to go out and be doing the face-to-face door-knocking work. So that's been exciting to watch happen this year.
Well, Attorney Jay Rossner was talking about how the language of integration and segregation is very strong in people's minds, and it's a lot different, has a different connotation than the language of preference and racial preference that's used by opponents of affirmative action. You were talking about how you appeal and talk to different communities. Jackie, would you like to comment on how you do that in terms of what language you use and getting people on board in supporting affirmative action?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, we use different languages even on our campus, right? That it's not, there's not one set student language. Certainly, I think on college campuses, people understand that affirmative action is about race and it's about racism and it's about, you know, past discrimination, current discrimination, and we use those words, and we don't shy away from those words, and we think it's, in general, a mistake to shy away from those words, but there are certainly communities on our campus in which we talk about diversity, and where we talk about the importance of diversity and how diversity benefits everyone, and I think that good, effective organizing work is really about knowing the audience you're approaching, knowing the people you're talking to, and understanding how you can bring them in to a fuller understanding and how you need to start with language and with words that they understand. But, you know, our big kind of slogan is that race must be a factor because racism is a factor. And so certainly we use language that maybe other people in other areas talking about affirmative action wouldn't use. But I think on college campuses, that people are pretty smart and they're pretty up on the issues, and they understand what we're talking about.
And so we only have about 2 minutes left. Mark Kamamura, would you like to make any closing comments on how you're going to work in coalition with the undergrad students and maybe some thoughts on language as well, since that's kind of been one of the things that's been running as a thread throughout this discussion?
Right. Well, throughout this whole case and our organizing, we've been really supportive of the undergraduate students, and we've been working hand in hand with them because most of us were undergraduates in states like Texas and California and Washington, where we were experiencing these similar initiatives. So there is definitely some personal motive for going out and making sure that the things that happened in our states aren't happening in Michigan, and the use of language, a number of different groups and offices on campus have actually supported different diversity-related dialogues. And actually, I'm a part of a dialogue group, Diversity Dialogues, where we go out into on the campus, and it's starting to take a form where they want us to come into the community and start talking about words and language, and why do we use these things, and why do we talk about why is this an important issue? And so I believe that the key is education, educating our community and educating the people that are going to be voting, which is, mainly the, people that aren't even on the University of Michigan campus. So, and understand how that's going to affect us, our education, and our future. So, that's pretty much where we're at right now, and been a real big push at the university.
And that was Mark Kamamura with Students of Color at Rackham. And we were also joined for this discussion by Jackie Bray, who is a member of Students Supporting Affirmative Action, and Jay Rosner, Executive Director of the Princeton Review Foundation. Thanks to you all. I wish we had more time to continue this discussion, but maybe we can have you back on another time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye
now. Now, we got to wrap up the show in just a minute here on Rise Up Radio, but we want to give you a couple of announcements, upcoming events in the New York, New Jersey area. New Jersey youth activist Alec Ash, who was told he had oppositional disorder, will speak about his forced confinement in a reformatory coming up on Monday, December 29th at 7 p.m. The event is free and will take place at Blue Stocking Bookstore at 172 Allen Street between Stanton and Rivington. That's 7 p.m. this Monday, December 28th. You can call Blue Stocking for more information. The Malcolm X Grassroots Movement presents Kuji Kagala, a fundraiser for the People's Self-Defense Campaign, Saturday, December 27th, that's tomorrow, at 1206 Pacific Street, number 1B, between Bedford and Nostrand, with music by DJ Revolution. For more information, you can call 718-254-8800. 718-254-8800. That's the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement supporting the People's Self-Defense Campaign with a big party, music from DJ Revolution.
And we'd like to thank our guests, Nellie Bailey from the Harlem Tenants Council and the Coalition to Preserve Community, and Liza Dwoskin of the Student Coalition on Columbia's Expansion, and
Tom Kapner from the 121st, 122nd Block Association.
And also attorney Jay Rosner from Princeton Review and student organizers Mark Kamamura and Jackie Bray from Ann Arbor at University of Michigan.
You've been listening to Yanilda Gonzalez, Nell Geiser, and Leanne Stanky on Rise Up Radio, which, as always, is a production of Free Radio Youth Collective. If you want to check out two archive versions of our show or check out our new double CD compilation, Artists Fight the System, hit us up at our new location, www.riseupradio.org.
That's www.riseupradio.org. If you'd like to call with comments, reach us at 212-209-2948, 212-209-2948. We'll go out with Red, Black, and Green, which you can find on Get Free or Die Tryin', the new mixtape from Dead Prez and RBG. Thanks for listening to Rise Up Radio.
Peace out.
This is all genocide. Let's get free or die trying to save our nation and children. Let's get free or die trying to save our nation and children.
And of course, you tune to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Rise Up Radio, back next Friday.